Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. celebrating a Kings victory. And we're still celebrating a Niners victory on this beautiful Tuesday, the 14th. And it's the 14th show, joined by our guy of the Candlestick Chronicles, Chris Biederman. Chris, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys? It's been a while. Long time no see.
I know. Good to see you and good to have you on the show. Before we go with the Candlestick Chronicles and the Niners who just smacked the Jacksonville Jaguars, you were in the building. We had a nice dinner together. What were your takeaways from the Kings and their win over the Cavs?
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to shoot 65% and make 55% of their threes, they're going to be a pretty tough team to beat. But, you know, I think that ultimately getting De'Aaron Fox back is he's the straw that stirs the drink, I should say, right? Like the offense is just at a completely different level. It looked like as good as the offense was last year, it looked like it hit a different level last night. And so it you know, makes you question how good can this offense get? Does it still have room to improve? And I would think based on last night against a pretty good defensive team in Cleveland, that answer could be yes. Now, does that mean that they're going to go to the Western Conference Finals and, you know, win multiple playoff series? That's to be determined. The West is a lot better this year than last year. And so, you know, the Kings are going to still have to improve defensively, but you have to like what you saw from them, given it was De'Aaron Fox's first game back.
Yeah, and talking about the Kings defense and them getting better on that side of the floor, I mean, to me, the big standout last night was Keegan Murray and his defensive effort on Donovan Mitchell, and the fact that he was still able to be a massive threat shooting the ball still, which we saw him struggle against the Warriors with earlier in this season. Just, I mean, if Keegan's gonna add defense and a little bit of a two-way element to his game, just in general, how do you feel like Keegan kind of unlocks the potential of this team and just how the floor and the ceiling of this team is kind of tied into Keegan's development?
Yeah, it feels like Mike Brown is making a really concerted effort to match Keegan up against the opponent's best perimeter player, right? And so I wonder if that's just like Mike Brown, even more than just like focusing on Keegan's defense, just being like, hey, take this challenge personally, right? Like you're going to go up. We need you to play at an all-star level for the Kings to take that next step and become a real Western Conference contender, right? So I think Mike Brown is just sort of challenging Keegan to not only play better defense, but say, hey, you're going to go up against our best guy. You're going to guard Steph Curry. You're going to guard Donovan Mitchell. And we trust you to be in that spot and do it at a reasonable level. And the Kings really need it because, frankly, like they don't have a whole lot of perimeter defense with size, right? Like they, you know, I think one of their biggest issues defensively is being able to prevent dribble penetration. And a lot of that is just their starting guards aren't known for their defense. Kevin Huerter is not a defensive guy. Harrison Barnes is a little long in the tooth at this point in his career. And you obviously don't have a whole lot of rim protection with Domantas Sabonis. So it's going to be up to their perimeter defense to really improve and take a step. And when you look at the guys in the regular rotation, Keegan Murray is that guy that can take that next step and elevate their perimeter defense a little bit. So given his size and all of that, it's super important that he develops defensively. And even, like I said, bigger than that is, you know, can Keegan Murray take the challenge night to night going up against the opponent's best perimeter player? Because they need him to reach that all-star level. So I think it's a fun challenge for Keegan, and it's smart by Mike Brown to challenge him in that way and try to push him to elevate his game that way.
Talking to Chris Biederman of the Candlestick Chronicles, now time to switch over to that team in the Bay, the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, Chris, is there any way you can script a better palate cleanser for the 49ers than what they did to the Jags after the bye week, adding Chase Young, getting healthy, a great game for Brock Purdy? This is exactly what the doctor ordered.
Yeah, with the exception of maybe Christian McCaffrey getting in the end zone.
Right. They tried. Yeah.
They really tried. I think that was the only thing. Look, like they haven't been great in the red zone, I guess, overall the last few weeks. But obviously, when you're scoring long touchdowns, that's not going to be too much of an issue against a team like Jacksonville. But like, it went about as well as it could have, right? Like, right. It looked like, you know, after through 5 weeks of the season, I was talking about the Niners being the best team in the league. I was comparing them to the 1994 team based on how they were playing and how much talent they had, right? And that 1994 team, arguably the best, if not one of the best teams in franchise history, right? Like, that's the level that I think this team could get to, given the talent that's on the roster. And then, of course, they have a three-game losing streak, making me and anybody else with that opinion look pretty stupid. So it was good to, you know, for the 49ers to get back, get their swagger back. I think there's an intangible element having Deebo Samuel and Trent Williams on the field. Like, the production speaks for itself with those guys. But obviously, like, their demeanor, their attitude, their toughness, their swagger, I think has a huge impact on the way they're able to play offensively. And then you even see defenses adjust every time Deebo Samuel goes in motion, right? Like, you can tell the defense is sort of freaking out, trying to figure out how to defend him. And then you also have to factor in Christian McCaffrey and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle. So that was about as well as it could have gone for the 49ers, I would say, with the exception of getting Christian McCaffrey the touchdown. And then defensively, you add Chase Young to an already super talented pass rush, and you have a secondary that's playing at a higher level and forcing Trevor Lawrence to hold on to the ball a little bit longer rather than just, you know, getting to the top of his drop and getting the ball out quickly. It was, you know, he was a little confused. They were mixing up his the looks they were showing him, and it allowed the pass rush more time to get to him. And five sacks, you know, that's exactly what the formula is for the 49ers. It's, you know, you have to have a good secondary to complement a good pass rush. You can't just allow a quarterback to get rid of the ball quickly, which what happened for most of the last three games, right, before the Jacksonville game. So that was our biggest issue defensively. In addition to stopping the run, they did a really good job of that. So all in all, I would say it's about as good as it could have been expected on Sunday for sure.
Yeah, and talking about ranking these Niner teams and how important their defense is, you know, the thing that's really when you have Kyle Shanahan as your offensive coordinator, head coach, whatever you want to call him, the offense is going to take care of itself. The thing that has really kept the Niners, you know, in the NFC Championship games and in these Super Bowl contentions has been their defense and how elite their defense has been. The past couple of years, their scoring defense has been near the tops of the NFL. I think last year they were actually number one, and they're sitting tied with the Chiefs right now for fewest points allowed. How would you rank, just from a talent perspective, the talent that the Niners have on this defensive unit and just how it ranks in these past couple years, I guess, maybe in a post-Willis era or even before that?
Yeah, coming into the season, we had talked on the podcast a little bit about comparing like this defensive line to the 2019 defensive line, mm-hmm. right? And that 2019 defensive line was basically 50% different with DeForest Buckner there and D Ford there. D Ford dealt with hamstring injuries. I think he played about 20% of the snaps that season, but he was still super effective when he was on the field. It felt like anytime there was third and long, the Niners were going to either heat up the quarterback or get a sack or force a turnover in those spots. So coming into the year before they added Chase Young, there was an interesting conversation to be had about comparing this defensive line with Javon Hargrave and a better version of Nick Bosa to that 2019 unit. And then you add Chase Young, a former number two overall pick, who's just, you know, super talented. And yeah, there were a lot of people, I think as it's borne out, this hasn't been the correct take, but even going into his draft, there were some people who thought Chase Young was a better prospect than Nick Bosa. It hasn't borne out that way, but just given the overall talent of this defensive line, I think you can make a pretty strong case that this group is better than the 2019 defensive line. And that was, you know, that was the best defensive line in the league, and it wasn't particularly close. Now, I would say the Niners don't have Richard Sherman, right? Richard Sherman was an All-Pro that year, and it wasn't so much about his physical skills. It was just about how intelligent he was and how he could basically call out the play to his teammates based on, you know, where offensive players were lining up and down and distance tendencies and all that. Like, Richard Sherman was in essence a coach in the field in a similar way that Fred Warner is. But now, you know, Tre'Varius Ward, maybe a more physically talented player at this point in his career than Richard Sherman was then, but I don't know that you could replace Richard Sherman's intelligence. I do think Jimmy Ward is still a pretty sizable upgrade over what they have at safety with Deshaun Gibson and certainly the nickel position, although you have to feel pretty good about what you saw from D'Amador Lenore moving into the slot and Ambry Thomas obviously moving outside. But it's a long-winded way of me saying that I think this defensive line is better than 2019. I think the secondary in 2019 was probably a little bit better than this one. So it is a little bit different, but I think overall, like, the ceiling of this version of the 49ers defense is a little bit better because you do feel better probably about Chase Young than you did about Dee Ford. And you have Nick Bosa now playing at a higher level than he did when he was a rookie. Added with Javon Hargrave, who completely dominated that game on Sunday. And Eric Armstead, who's, you know, he's not going to put up huge sack numbers, but he is a very steady player and also really good against the run. So comparing them, I think they're very comparable, but I think the ceiling, given the pass rush that this team could have, is better than 2019 because of the addition of Chase Young.
Chris Biederman, thank you so much. Candlestick Chronicles, we will talk to you again next week, hopefully celebrating another Niners W, because they're going up against the Buccaneers and Baker Mayfield, and we know that Nick Bosa and Chase Young, they're going to have something ready for him.
Yeah, they're not huge Baker Mayfield guys after what happened in college, if you remember.
Exactly, to put it kindly. Thank you, Chris. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we will talk to you soon.
No problem. You guys have a good one. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Chris Biederman, Candlestick Chronicles. Make sure you go check out that pod. They do a lot of good work. And Chris can talk Kings, too. That was great to start off the segment. Got to get to a break. When we get back, it's time. Get them in. Beaming or dreaming. We need to know. 916-339-1140. Or on the YouTube chat, text line, call line. Beaming or dreaming, where are you at? I don't know where Nate is. I don't know where Chris is, but I know where I am. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Thank you to Chris Biederman, Candlestick Chronicles. Yep. And also for that Kings talk. We just, you know, we have guests on the show. We have friends of the show. We're all well-rounded people.
Yes.
You know what I mean? When you grow up your family, I know my mom is really big. You got to be well-rounded.
Yeah,
right. Definitely. We can talk about everything on this show. And Chris Biederman, great job. We will talk to him again next week and hopefully celebrate another Niners W. Who, by the way, we have TVs on in the studio, and First Take was running, and, you know, Stephen A does Stephen's A-list.
Ugh.
And Chris pointed out that he did not have the Niners for his top five NFL teams right now. He had, I just saw it quickly. I know I saw the Eagles.
Eagles were number one.
I know
one.
I saw the Lions at five.
I think it was Eagles, Chiefs, Dolphins, Lions were at five. Who are we missing? Ravens at four.
Right. So no Niners, but hey, I think the Niners might prefer it that way, get a little chip on their shoulder.
You don't want to be recognized by Stephen A anyway.
Maybe not. Right. It might be the kiss of death. Yeah. So we'll see what happens with the Niners this week, and we'll continue to talk Niners. We got some more Niners guests coming up for you as the week moves forward. But back to Kings talk, and yes, it's that time. And we are working. We're working on a sounder for this, right? We're working on people, working on some things for Beaming or Dreaming. Okay, we're going to put some producers in the booth. Yep. I'm talking to, who are the big producers? Maybe I'll get DJ Khaled, Metro Boomin, you know, want some more.
Yeah.
Tay Key. I can't say the last part of that on these airways. So we're working on it, but for now, you just got Chris and myself, Beaming or Dreaming. So let's start reading them. I see right here from Amid Rock, Beaming times 400.
Hey.
That's what you like to hear from the 916, our segment prior to Chris Biederman. Harrison Barnes, wear a suit. I'm laughing at that. That's exactly what his veteran leadership is. But 916, I'm sure you are beaming as well. Let's see the other ones, beaming or dreaming. See on the text line another 530. I'm beaming, and you know why. Kevin Huerter has returned.
Ooh.
So let's go inside to the glass. Let's go to Nate first, because it's been a while.
Yeah.
We've been, you know, we haven't been able to talk Beaming or Dreaming. I think we did good because we played the Warriors so much. It was hard. We couldn't keep doing it. Then you played the Lakers. So we had a nice break from Beaming or Dreaming, and we've learned so much.
Yeah. Nate, is this your first time
this
playing?
This is my first time.
I was
like,
I think every time we've had a Kyle, because Kyle thinks it's funny to
with
play
the nursery.
The nursery sound. So.
Oh, yeah. Kyle thinks a lot of things are funny.
That's right.
He's a stand-up comedian, you know?
Dude, whatever.
Nate, beaming or dreaming?
I'm beaming. How could you not be beaming right now?
That's what I'm saying.
Beaming's good, obviously, right?
You gotta be a hater.
Yes.
I'm not a hater.
There you go. James X on the YouTube chat, Beeman, but not Duarte. He'll come around.
Oh, my goodness.
My goodness. I know we talked about Harrison Barnes, but that was a really rough game for Chris Duarte.
Oof, yeah.
That was incredibly rough.
That was been a rough
stretch. Three fouls in 3 minutes.
It was something crazy. He picked up two fouls in 46 seconds.
Yes.
I noted that. And then, by the time the 8-minute mark hit, I think he had four fouls.
Did he come back
in? And a traveling call.
Let's see here. Chris Duarte played 9 minutes.
Yeah.
He checked in the fourth quarter. He played about four of those minutes.
Oh, so the garbage time
they
at
were
the end,
all,
probably?
He played all his minutes in the second quarter.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's rough. That was a rough go. And at one point, I don't know if you saw him, Chris and I kind of noted it, he threw his hands in the air after one of the fouls. Just really, really tough for him.
He's too handsy, man. He's just trying to, shout out the Kings, who were playing incredibly physical defense. We talked about yesterday, your favorite coach, whoever it was, saying, you start the game playing physical, so that way, you set the tone early and you can kind of ramp it down from there. He's just way too physical at all points. Like, he's just too much chest, too much hands. He's playing too tight on guys, so they're getting around him, and he's trying to compensate by, grabbing them and pulling them. And it's looked really bad defensively, and I think that's definitely affected his offense as well. He's supposed to be a guy who can do both. His defense was supposed to be the cherry on top. First and foremost, dude's supposed to be a shooter. We haven't even seen that from him.
No, I think I just specifically remember a corner three that did not go down for him. From the 650, I'm Beeman with Kevin Herter back and Keegan Murray taking the jump.
Come on.
This team is getting past the second round.
Woo.
Book it. Thank you to the 650. Chris, let's go to you now.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be Beeman, especially because, the spirit of this segment is, will the Kings, like that texter said, will they be better than last season? I think that last night, after seeing last night and the trajectory that this team is now on, what is that, three straight wins for these guys? Mm-hmm. You got to feel like they're headed towards the right direction. De'Aaron Fox comes back. These guys have the most ridiculous shooting night they've had all season long. One of the best shooting nights of the Mike Brown era in general. You got to feel like this team's working in the right direction. And you said it perfectly earlier. This is like the Niners' first 5 weeks, where this is the example of, okay, how can the Kings have playoff success looking like the team that they looked like last night?
Yeah.
I'm
beating
it.
So you got to be Beeman from Jess Escoto. I don't know when I would ever say dreaming. I'm Beeman till I die. Of course you
Come
are,
on.
Jess.
Come
That's
on.
What we like to hear from Pike 916. Beam me up, Scotty.
Yes, sir.
That's what we like to hear as well. But wait, here on the 916, I'm dreaming. I don't believe that they can continue to shoot at this rate. But I hope I'm wrong from the 916.
Sure.
Hey,
that's
fair.
They did it last
year,
right? I mean, they had stretches.
So I was just about to look.
Up.
What? They shot 59%. They only shot 59% twice last year.
Ooh.
One of them was the Brooklyn game, which was the infamous TNT
the
game.
Good one.
They shot 60% towards the end of the year in Portland. I believe that was the game after they had clinched a playoff spot.
That was Dave's crying game.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Or the day. It was either that one or the day after. The Kings shot 61% in that game. Last night was incredibly rare. I'm trying to see if there's a time they shot 47% from three.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, those they had they actually had nine games last year where they shot above 47% from three. So, it's not like it's a complete anomaly. This team definitely had nights last year where they shot like they did last night.
From the 530, I'm still dreaming until I see Keegan repeat that shooting explosion.
I can't knock that because I just asked Biederman. I said, that's baked into the Kings' ceiling is how well Keegan's going to look. And if he's going to look like he did last night, then the ceiling is beaming. It's through the roof. The Kings can definitely be a better team if Keegan Murray's a better player this year. But if Keegan's not going to be as effective, not as lethal, that's a big problem for the Kings' plans this year, for sure.
From Gilbert Hernandez, this segment is crazy. Where was all this same energy a week ago? Now the offense is okay because shots fell. Need to use this as a learning experience to relax.
No, literally, yes. Literally.
But to be fair to Gilbert, here's the thing. The open shot percentage for the Kings is wildly better than the other teams. So they're going to continue to get open shots. So do we think they're going to shoot like this? As Chris just said, they only shot this high of a percentage twice last season. No. But that doesn't mean that they have to in order to win basketball games, because they weren't defending like this last season.
No.
So it is about shots falling because it's a make or miss league. And I hate to simplify it that much, but it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, last week, as Jess said, I don't know when I would be dreaming. If you weren't dreaming last week,
come on,
when you were down bad to the Houston Rockets,
down tremendous,
then you are just, that is what you call a real deal fan.
Yeah.
So I hear what you're saying, Gilbert, but at the same time, it is about shots falling.
Yes.
Because these weren't wild shots like the Keegan Murray shot over his brother, leaning out of bounds in the corner. These are legitimate open shots that they've just been missing that we knew that they could hit. Are they going to continue to hit at this clip? I have no clue, but we knew that they were going to shoot better. Here on the 916, before we get to a break, definitely a beamer. That is from the 916. Got to get to a break. Oh, Chris, you
can
got something for me.
Real quick, just
yes,
on
sir.
The open shots, just so we can get an update on that number. The Indiana Pacers are still taking the most open looks from three of any team in the NBA. They're at 26.7. They're knocking down 40% of their open looks, which is probably what you should do on wide open looks. The Kings, second place in the NBA, 23 wide open three attempts per game. They're shooting 34%, 6% less than the first place team. Like, if you can make up just
And that
four
includes
or five,
last night.
That it should yes, that should include last night. This is from NBA.com. They usually update the stats the night after, or the day after, I should say. So these should be updated numbers. The Kings are shooting 34.1% on wide open looks. That is third worst in the NBA, regardless of how many attempts. So the Kings are shooting tremendously bad on just the open looks.
Right.
And that's what we're talking about. That's what makes last night, if you want to say that's not repeatable, my pushback would be last night they got so many open looks.
Right.
And they just haven't been knocking those down all year long. And that's an abnormality. That's what we've been talking about all season long.
Right.
When it's just as simple as they're not making shots. It's not like, you know, that's some dumb analysis. It's quite literally like they're missing a ton of free throws, which they also are. It's
right.
like missing free
it's the open shots. And I will say this as we really do need to get your break. 916-339-1140 if you want to be a part of the conversation. The last thing I'll say is this. It's not like, and no offense to these guys as non-shooters, it's not like Keon put up three threes and Davion put up four.
Exactly.
These are your shooters.
Those are your shooters.
And they just haven't been making shots. All right,
got
to get to a break. When we get back, more of a love fest for Mike Brown. We have audio about the DPOG crown and much more. Styles and Watkins, Sactown Sports.
Live and local.
This is Sactown Sports.
Styles and Watkins, Sactown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m., talking all things Kings, sprinkling in some Niners as well, some NFL, all that jazz as the Kings take care of the Cavs in very decisive fashion. I think everybody felt really good about that. We were talking beaming or dreaming. Most people were beaming. A couple dreamings, a decent amount of dreamings. And I get it. That was an offensive explosion.
Sure.
And we're still trying to figure out, okay, maybe the Kings don't do that every single game. But we knew that they weren't going to shoot 1-for-7 and 0-for-7 if you're Keegan or Kevin Huerter. And we were talking with our guy on the YouTube chat. Gilbert Hernandez was talking about some of the as I continue to read what he was saying, talking about the conversations as far as fire Mike Brown. And yeah, we
Brown
saw
out
the YouTube,
of town.
Brown out of town. But that wasn't us.
No,
that was not us.
Not
and
us.
Yes, the Houston Rockets, as we mentioned, that doesn't look as bad anymore. They are 6-3. I don't know if they played last night, yesterday,
so,
but they're 6-3. They beat some good teams. Ime Udoka has them rolling. So it was all different a week ago. But when the facts change, opinions change.
Exactly.
That's just how it goes. And I don't think most people lost the faith, right? I think a lot of the dreamings that we heard last week was just a fact of, hey, What if last year wasn't real?
Yeah.
Right. And I posed a bit of that question as well. And last night told us, no, we can still get there.
Yeah.
We can still get there. At what clip will we remain there? We don't know yet, but we will still get there. And we do have the ability to reach our ceiling. And how do they respond to my question to that? Because we are the flagship. So I'm sure the Kings listen to this. Shout out to all the Kings players listening right now. How do they respond to that with their best win of the year? You have right here on our beautiful rundown that Chris has been rocking the rundown lately. Let me tell you, folks, he has been contributing at an outstanding.
I wasn't before, but now.
He always was. He always was. But he's just taking it up a notch here. And the question is, how do the Kings follow up their best win of the season, which is what we said about the Oklahoma City Thunder? And the answer, with their best win of the season. That's as we simple. Bring it back to Mike Brown and the appreciation for him getting his 400th win. You just can't say enough about the guy.
Can't. I mean, the dude, we talked about it earlier, but he's just such the perfect fit for what this team is and who they want to be. He's met them at where they were, I think, when they first initially got here. He's really brought them along, and he's gotten them to believe in it as well. I think a big part in the Kings' past has been, you know, frankly, it's a little bit like a high school where there's clicks and you can feel the clicks on the floor sometimes. You know, sometimes the off-the-floor relationships end up seeping to on the floor. And Mike Brown has just done a great job of doing what every coach says they're going to do and get everybody pulling on the same string and getting everybody working towards the same goal. And it really feels like, especially last year, he just had complete buy-in from his guys. I know he has them all sign the all-in contract at the start of the year and, you know, it keeps them accountable. But truly, like, it really feels like these guys are a true unit. Like, I talk a lot about, especially in the NBA, there's so many egos and guys who, you know, if you have LeBron James on your team, he's going to elevate above everyone. You have Steph Curry on your team. Yeah, he's your teammate, but we played a clip of GP2 talking to Jonathan Kuminga. They call him 30. You know, they like, it's almost like he is a god to them.
Right, right.
This Kings team really does feel like one of the few basketball teams in the NBA where there's not some massive personality that outshines everybody. These guys truly just love to hoop, and I think that plays itself out with Mike Brown being the perfect leader of that group. Is just a guy who demands greatness and, again, is just really fair about how he goes about it as well.
Yeah, and we have sound here from Mike Brown's response to receiving the DPOG crown, or as Jess said on the YouTube chat, the DCOG crown, which makes a lot of sense with the defensive player of the game now being the defensive coach of the game. And really just an ode to his career winning his 400th career win.
Yeah.
Mike, first off, congrats on 400.
Thank you.
I heard that you got the crown this evening.
It should have gone to Keegan.
Should have gone to Keegan.
But nobody in the locker room listens to me.
There you go. And here he is again
so
talking about being the 54th coach all time in terms of wins.
I don't know if I have that one for you, Alan.
There
all
you
good.
Go.
All right.
All good. Well, yeah.
I have the post game, though, if you want to
hear it. That works. Play that.
Yeah.
Deflections, 8 defensive rebounds. Donovan Mitchell, 7 for 21, 33%. But the defensive player of the game
with
400 wins.
So
there you go.
Just the best.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted anyway. Thank
Incredible.
You, Nate. Thank
Just
you,
so
Nate.
Good.
That's great
you
stuff.
You got to watch the video. If you haven't yet, you have to watch the video. Mike Brown got the crown on, and he's so funny. He throws up the four that they all throw up after every game, and it's just a great video. Got to check it out.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
And, you know, I think the biggest thing for Mike Brown, and we talked about it a little bit earlier in the show, is about evolving. And there are a lot of coaches, as we, you know, talk NFL and other things where, you know, you see these guys and they get held to a certain standard if you've won a championship before and they just don't have the ability to evolve, right? Like Mike McCarthy, to me, you got your one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers and you've been the same guy ever since, right? And to me, the game has changed. Things change, right? It doesn't take much. If you have a younger cousin or a younger sibling, things can change very quickly.
For
and
sure.
Another guy like that to me that just hasn't been able to evolve or change has been Sean Payton. I mean, Sean Payton is out of the game. He's doing his coaching. I know they won last night, but he's doing his coaching. You know, he's an analyst, and then he comes back, and he's throwing everybody. He's throwing Hackett under the bus, and now he throws Russ under the bus, throws everybody under the bus, right? And I just don't think I understand why you see greatness and you think that you can re-harness that greatness. But you got to be careful because the game changes so much, and you have to find somebody that has the ability to evolve because people get older, right? And it's something that not many of us talk about or like to talk about, age and things like that. But the fact of the matter is, if you have been out the game, and the older you get, the further removed you can become from your team,
right?
Right. When Mike Brown was a completely different age, how long ago was that when he was coaching LeBron?
Yeah.
They were a lot closer in age than what he's dealing with now. And I know LeBron came in out of high school, but even still, I mean, that was decades ago, and now you're still handling the Keegan Murrays of the world, the Kobe Joneses of the world that are fresh out of
born
college.
In 2000s.
Right. Yeah. And you're trying to find something. I mean, we heard conversations with players who can't connect because they've been playing.
Right. Matt Stafford, shout out.
10, 11 years. And they think, I don't have anything to say. You know, there's no way for me to kind of connect with my
younger
own
teammates, right. Yeah.
Let alone a coach. So for Mike Brown to be able to find a level playing field for these guys and to be able to speak to them about things that, you know, I know basketball is the common denominator here, but there becomes a lot more, right? Talking about family, talking about things that you like. And it feels like Mike Brown is one of those guys. And I'll be honest with you. I know he is another great. I have no clue. I think some guys are just so great, maybe you power through it, but I don't know how good Popovich is at that. I don't know. I know he's a great coach, and I know, you know, I think maybe the way he coaches differently, but some of these guys, when you see this coaching carousel and these same guys just get recycled over and over again and they still don't have success, hi, talking to you, Josh McDaniels, it's only because, look, you know, like, things have continued to change, and these guys have remained the same. And it didn't really work back then, so it definitely isn't going to work now. And even if it did, I'd say the same thing about Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick, Bill Belichick, Greg Popovich, those types of guys who obviously are champions, how does it still translate? I don't know, right? Because when I see a Mike Brown, and I see a D'Amico Ryans, and I see a Robert Saleh, and these guys, there's clearly a new wave coming in terms of coaching, so you either get with it or get lost.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, just to kind of wrap a bow on everything you said there, I mean, Kings fans understand exactly what you're talking about when you say, you know, you can be removed from the game and then come back and everything's completely different. We went through that with George Karl, where George Karl had left the game for a couple of years. He had cancer and then came back, was able to come back. And he just had no idea how to handle a personality like DeMarcus Cousins. He also had Rondo on that team. And you could tell that just the old-fashioned, I'm going to scream at you guys until you guys listen and it goes through your head, just doesn't work anymore. And I think Mike Brown has talked about that in the past. You know, the guy that he was in Cleveland was a very, you know, stringent disciplinarian who was coming off of those Spurs years of, you know, being with Greg Popovich. And and then he went over to coach Kobe. That obviously Kobe demands so much of not only his teammates, but also his coaches as well. That environment was incredibly tense and stressful. And then he goes to Golden State and he's coming from those past environments. He also goes back to Cleveland for a failed stint as well. But then he goes to Golden State where everything is just vibes. It's all vibes are immaculate. Steve Kerr, I don't want to say he barely coaches his guys, but when it comes to what happens,
he let Andre Iguodala coach a game.
100%. Yeah. Like he's just like, the players will figure it out and that'll be best for the team. Partially because Steve Kerr came up in so many great basketball situations as well. But Mike talks about all the time how much he learned in that Warriors stint of just, you know, you don't have to be such a hard ass, essentially, is what he learned. You don't have to be a disciplinarian. Sometimes being a player's coach, I think coaches view being a player's coach as a negative because it's like, I don't want to be known as only having this job because I'm good buddies with
the
players.
Yeah, I'm the cool guy.
Nobody wants to have that as their label. And Mike Brown understood, I don't care. I really, like, I think we would consider Mike Brown a player's coach. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like we talked about earlier, he still has that level of respect. And he still is a disciplinarian. He picks and chooses the moments in which he decides to, you know, hit you, like, not literally. But he treats Keegan Murray like a you know, like he's his dog or something. The way that he yells and demands from Keegan, you know, it's got to be tough to go through that. But also, I'm sure Keegan understands at the same time, this dude's only yelling at me like that because he loves me. And he understands. I'm sure Mike Brown is very quick to put his arm around Keegan's shoulder, probably more than anybody else, and understand that I'm only so hard on you because I believe in you so much. And I think that bonding and in the understanding of having both sides, of being the disciplinarian, being a guy who has respect, but also getting the players to like you on a human level, I think that Mike Brown's entire journey brought him to become this final evolution of a coach. And of course, he's not done evolving, hopefully. Everything that you stated, completely true. It almost just starts now with the guy that he is here. But I have full faith that he's just going to continue to evolve and evolve and evolve, and what comes of it, I think, will be ultimately success for this team.
Yeah, well said. And again, yeah, I know I threw out Greg Popovich, but he had Steve Kerr, so maybe it's all connected. Greg Popovich just does it a different way. So I'll remove Greg Popovich, and somebody can help me out with another name here. Another name real quick, Andy Reid is a guy who I feel like has evolved.
100%.
Great
call.
And now found more success. Got to get to a break. When we get back, there is a name. I know we said no trade generator, but some news just dropped. Some news just dropped, and the word on the street is that the Lakers are already making calls. Will the Kings? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. A Mike Brown Appreciation Day here on Sacktown Sports. And why not? He deserves it. 400th win as an NBA head coach. He is 54th all-time. You said 14th? On the Kings list?
Yes, he is, as you said, 54th all-time, just behind Michael Malone, who has 414 career wins, and just a little bit ahead of Quinn Snyder, who has 387. And yeah, on the all-time Kings head coaching list, Mike Brown already sits at number 14, three games behind everybody's favorite head coach, Jerry Reynolds, at 56 wins. Luke Walton finished his Kings coaching career. Shout out Luke. He was in the building yesterday. Not really. Shout out Luke. Luke Walton finished with 68 career wins as a Sacramento Kings head coach. So Mike Brown should probably, I'm kind of trying to add some wins here. You know, if the Kings win 50 games this year, Mike Brown can climb all the way up to number 11.
Wow.
Ed Jucker, who was the Kings head coach from 1968 to 1969, had 80 career wins.
Wow.
Mike Brown already is number four right now in the all-time win percentage at 582, just behind Jack McMahon at 583. So,
go ahead,
Nate. Alan, are you familiar with Puke Walton, that situation? Because that was brought up last night when we were doing the Kings game.
Yeah.
So Luke Walton was fired the game after a fan threw up all over the court. Mm-hmm. And there was about a 25-minute delay. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the taste in our mouth we have from Luke Walton here in Sac.
Yeah, yes. No, I hear you. No, I was just going to say, you know, to be fair, being 54th on the list, when you think Mike Brown, I would say maybe a little underrated as a coach.
I would definitely
say so. But hearing him number 54 all time and where he is even just in Kings history, these guys get paid a lot of money. Wow. And they get cashed out. We get that. I mean, Jimbo Fisher, even in college, getting paid about $70 million to sit at home. Mm. But it is tough to be a successful head coach.
I'm looking at it right now. Mike Brown is 23rd all-time in win percentage.
Wow.
As a head coach. I would have never guessed that. That's just incredible. There's only three active head coaches who have a better all-time win percentage. That's Steve Kerr, who's got a 66% win percentage. Greg Popovich, who has a 64% win percentage, which is just absurd because of how long he's been coaching. And Ime Udoka, in his short NBA coaching career, has a 62% win percentage. Mike Brown is sitting at 61%.
Where's Spoelstra? Is he not?
Spoelstra is at 34. He's at 58% of his wins.
I wanted to ask you guys this question about Mike Brown. So you were both in the arena last night. Mm-hmm. We're doing Mike Brown Appreciation Day. There were two plays specifically that came through on the broadcast. I'm listening to the game because I'm running the game here. But the first one was when Domantas Sabonis and Keegan Murray trapped Donovan Mitchell in the corner, and he had to call a timeout. And Mike Brown went crazy for them. Did that translate to you guys? How nuts he was getting about that?
I saw him go nuts twice. I'm curious to hear
the second time.
I didn't see how crazy he went the first time. Mm-hmm. I saw Keegan and Sabonis trap. I think it was Donovan Mitchell in the corner. I saw them give a high five. I saw Mike Brown walk out to the free throw line, which he usually does at timeouts. And I think I saw a little fist, Tiger Woods fist pump, but nothing more than that.
I know the second one you're going to say is the Malik Monk charge.
Yeah, the Malik Monk charge. He went crazy for that.
Yeah, and it actually got reversed or overturned, but he still felt really good about it. He got asked about it in the post game, and everybody said it was a terrible overturn, but was just excited. And he said, even though it got overturned, he was still happy about it because it just shows growth, especially with Malik Monk. Who's another guy that Mike Brown said could be elite defensively, right? You talk about that lateral quickness and that length. So I think Mike Brown was just happy about everything all around as we continue Mike Brown Appreciation Day and take your calls and your texts as well and the YouTube chat. As we get to this developing story from Shams Charania, by the way, it is crazy to me how if you're going to get NBA news, it's from two people. Like, when is the last time somebody else broke something big besides Woj or Shams?
Yeah, it's been a while. Like Chris Haynes gets sometimes he'll break, especially like Damian Lillard stuff. He'll break. Right. Occasionally you'll get the Mark Stein, bomb or something like that. Yeah. But definitely more times than not, those agents.
They got the game on lock, man. I mean, it is on lock. But anyway.
It must be nice, man.
It must be.
Like, I know they're working hard, but I feel like so many things are just given to them.
At this point.
Just like, they're not checking in all the time. Hey, what's the progress on Zach LaVine or anything? They're just, the agent is just feeding them this information.
Exactly. To me, it's very similar to bring it back to the dogs, for all the dogs. Drizzy.
Yeah.
Right? Drizzy, it doesn't really matter. I mean, he just messes around on albums now.
Yeah.
And they still break records because of everything he's done in the past and who he is now, right? Shams, he worked his butt off to get to this point, and so did Woj.
Yep.
And now
they're coasting.
The work just almost gets done for them. I know they're hustling, and I would love. I know they did something, but I would love to see some type of documentary
for sure.
On like maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're still fighting off the Chris Haynes of the world, and those guys are legitimately contenders, but it just doesn't seem like it.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it feels like a lot of their day is more so like building and retaining relationships more so than anything. But I would love to see like a documentary of just following those guys during the summer and seeing, like how do they get free agency news? How do they get trade news? And what does relationship building look like? Is it just them going to games and talking to scouts, or are they really, whining and dining these guys to try and get as much? Like, is there a level of sleaze behind getting
this news?
Who knows,
man? Because what's crazy to me is, especially now with how Twitter has changed and everyone can pay for verification, so you don't know what's real or what's not. Let's say the Kings, we are the flagship. Let's say Mike Brown called us and said, hey, guys, I want you to break this on the airwaves right now that we are trading XYZ for the person that Shams just brought up, and that is Zach LaVine. Now, the whole thing is that the Bulls have increased openness to explore trades with Zach LaVine, and they might just blow the whole thing up. For those of you who want to get the trade generator fired up, we know Chris has it fired up here as well. But I will say this, if Mike Brown called us and said it, or say Monty McNair called us and said it, we could say that on the air right now, but Shams would get it, and maybe he would say per Sals and Watkins, but it doesn't have any credibility or validity until even the one with our guy, Sam Amick, who we love, it's still connected. It's all connected to Shams or Woj.
He gets everything. I have no idea how it works. If I had to guess, maybe we can talk to Sam about it next time we see him, but if I had to guess, it's one of those things where Sam probably, Sam Amick goes to all the games. He's at every Kings game just about. I would assume it's one of those where he kind of gets whispers, or maybe he gets the direct information and he's like, okay, I could go out with this, but, you know, every great journalist, I believe, says you should always double check your sourcing. And right. so maybe it's one of those where, you know, Sam gets the initial information, sends it over to Shams. He's like, Shams, are you also hearing this? Can you text your agent friends and just confirm it? And then it's then it becomes a group effort and a group report instead of, you know, Sam saying it and then, you know, two different reports, if that makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, very interesting. All right, got to get to a break. When we get back, I just said who it is, Zach LaVine. We will fire up the trade generator on a day where we weren't supposed to do this.
Nope.
But when a superstar, I don't know if he's a star, he's, right?
Yeah, two-time
all-star. No, I wouldn't go superstar, but when a star becomes available, you have to ask the question yep. if you are in or out as a Kings fan, as the Beam regime. That and what stuck out most from the win. Oh, yeah, 12-15, the dog of the game. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.